Welcome to the last of our editorial board series of interviews profiling the candidates in area political races and their stands on the issues. I'm Tom Rogers. Today we bring you interviews with the two people running to be the next Illinois Attorney General, Democrat Lisa Madigan and Republican Joe Burkett. As with all of our interviews, we do not intend to make an endorsement. Instead, we bring you these unedited interviews to let you know what candidates think on a variety of issues. Of all the statewide contests in Illinois, perhaps no race has been closer or louder than the one for Attorney General. Lisa Madigan and Joe Burkett both overcame primary competition to run in the fall for the chance to replace outgoing AG and current gubernatorial candidate Jim Ryan. While Burkett served under Ryan in the DuPage County State's Attorney's Office and eventually became state's attorney himself, Madigan has served as a state senator for the last 2 years. Before that, Lisa Madigan was an attorney in employment law for the law firm of Sachnoff & Weaver. She began her career as a staffer for former Senator Paul Simon. She's single and lives in Chicago. AM 580's Jim Meadows and I talked with her.
Senator Madigan, your Republican opponent has more than 20 years' experience as a prosecutor. He currently oversees the second largest state's attorney's office in Illinois. He says being attorney general for the state of Illinois would be very similar to being a state's attorney in a large county. What specific talents and qualifications make you better suited to be attorney general?
The position of attorney general is not the 103rd state's attorney here in Illinois. I believe that the position of attorney general in this state is to be an advocate for all the people of the state, and in particular to make sure that we are protecting some of the most vulnerable people in our state. I have over 21 years of work experience, everything from serving under Senator Paul Simon on his staff in Washington, D.C., to working as a volunteer high school teacher over at a needy Catholic school in South Africa, the height of apartheid, to working on the west side of Chicago in a very high crime community, pioneering community policing strategies, working with police officers, working with families, and working with children to make sure that we keep them engaged in their education so they don't become part of the criminal justice system. In addition, I have served as an assistant dean of adult and continuing education at Wright College, which is one of the community colleges in Chicago. I have also been a lawyer in private practice, a civil litigator, where I represented clients in federal court, in state court, as well as in front of administrative agencies, because a lot of the work that I did was employment related, so in front of the EEOC and the Illinois Department of Human Rights and the Illinois Department of Labor, as well as the Illinois Department of Employment Security. Right now, I currently serve as a state senator, and I represent over 200,000 constituents from the north side of Chicago, and I deal with their complaints, and I deal with their problems, and I make sure that we pass better legislation to protect women and children who are victims of domestic violence, and I've passed laws that better protect elderly people and people with disabilities from abuse and neglect. All of these experiences come together for me to be able to serve as an advocate for the people of the state of Illinois, and I think it is experience that is necessary to be the attorney general, which is a very different position from being a state's attorney.
Is being an advocate different from being a prosecutor, and should an attorney general be more than simply a prosecutor?
Well, the attorney general's position, less than 10% of what is dealt with are what we would look at as criminal prosecutions work, which is traditionally what state's attorneys are doing. They are our frontline criminal prosecutors. In addition, the attorney general's office is working on consumer fraud issues. The attorney general's office is working on public utilities issues. The attorney general is working to make sure that some of the fastest growing crimes in the state of Illinois are being addressed. Identity theft is the fastest growing crime, white collar crime, throughout the country. Methamphetamine is the fastest growing drug problem we have here in the state of Illinois. Domestic violence is an issue that has an impact on over 300,000 women a year in the state. We have to do work to make sure that we're putting in place mandatory lifetime supervision for sex offenders to protect our children. And in terms of being the attorney general, there are really a number of things that need to be done. Yes, we need to make sure we are going after illegal activities, but we also need to make sure that we're working with the legislature to pass the necessary laws so that we can prevent certain things from happening and make them illegal. In addition, we need to work with the legislature, and I have experience by sitting as a member of the Appropriations Committee the entire time that I've been in the Senate to make sure that resources are going toward the problems that are out there. And that means making sure that we do provide money so that we can have more shelters for women who are victims of domestic violence. This year alone, it's estimated that we will turn 10,000 women away from shelters in the state of Illinois because we do not have the resources for the shelters and for the space for them. I think that's egregious, and it's work that needs to be done out of the Attorney General's office.
One of the things that the Attorney General also does is prosecute public corruption cases. It may involve possibly investigating or prosecuting members of your own party. In fact, your father has been under investigation for allegedly using staff members for political work. What would you do in situations like that where some people in the public could see it as a conflict of interest?
I've been very, very clear throughout my entire tenure as a state senator that I think we have to do all that we can to change the way government does business in the state of Illinois. I have been proposing legislation that would clean up and reform government in Illinois, and I have been thwarted in my attempts to pass that legislation by the Republicans that control the state Senate from DuPage. What I have proposed during my campaign for Attorney General is that we put in place a public integrity division in the Attorney General's office that is fully staffed. Right now, we are one of the only states in the country that doesn't have that. So we would have a division in the office that had career prosecutors, career investigators who could handle these investigations. In addition, there are over 30 states in the country that have an independent state ethics commission. This would be a group of people who are not part of government because they will not have government contracts. They won't be former legislators or former lobbyists. They will be a bipartisan commission that can initiate investigations as well as end up investigating if allegations are brought to them. In addition, we're one of the only states that does not provide training to our state employees on the ethics laws. And I want to see us put that in place. We can do that through the Attorney General's office and in conjunction with this independent state ethics commission to make sure that people know what the laws are, as well as make sure that they know about the Whistleblower Protection Act and better publicize that so that employees recognize if they know of illegalities going on, they are have to report those, but they will be protected. Their privacy will be protected, and they will not be retaliated against. So those are a number of things that I think we need to put in place, and they are parts of my public integrity program.
How much teeth, though, should that public integrity commission that you've talked about, this bipartisan commission, have? It's one thing to set that up. It's another thing to actually have that commission be involved in possibly leading to prosecution.
Well, over 30 states in the country do that right now. In fact, the majority of states, even in the Midwest, have independent state ethics commissions. It is a program that I've put forward that has been endorsed by Senator Paul Simon and Abner Mikva and other people throughout the state who I think have really been leaders in terms of looking at corruption and public integrity issues in the state. We would want to make sure that this independent state ethics commission had subpoena power, and so they had real authority to do those investigations. In terms of actually going into court and doing the prosecutions, that would either be turned over to the federal government, it would be turned over to the Attorney General, or it would be turned over to a local state's attorney, depending on what the matter involved.
How would you overcome, though, that public image that there is a connection between Lisa Madigan and Speaker Madigan, or with this Lisa Madigan and the Democratic Party, which has heavily supported you in the primary and in the upcoming election?
Well, I've been very clear that here in the state of Illinois, I believe we have allowed public corruption to take root. That has happened under a Republican administration, and I am guaranteeing people that regardless of who the allegations are against, whether the person is a Republican or a Democrat, those allegations are going to be taken seriously and they are going to be investigated, and if prosecutions need to take place, they will be.
Your challenger in the upcoming election has called for a debate with you on the issue of public corruption on that topic alone. Would you accept that?
We are going to engage in a number of debates, and I believe that because every single place I go in the state of Illinois, people want to talk about the issue of public corruption. Every debate we engage in, we will be spending a substantial amount of time talking about public corruption issues.
Anything about a single topic debate, though?
At this point, we have confirmed, I believe, that three debates are going to take place in which we will be talking about public corruption in every single one of them. So that's what I know we're doing right now, but we are going to engage in further negotiations about debates.
Since Governor Ryan imposed his moratorium on carrying out executions, there have been some reforms already put in place as far as prosecuting capital cases, and there have been many more proposals made. Which ones are the most important? What would you see as the priority for putting into place, and at what point would you support an end to the moratorium on capital punishment?
I believe that the governor was very courageous in putting in place a moratorium on the death penalty in Illinois. But clearly, after we had had over a dozen men released from death row, it was very clear that there was a problem here in Illinois in terms of implementing the death penalty in our capital punishment system. The legislature has put in place a number of reforms, as you mentioned, including the creation of a capital litigation trust fund that has allowed us to have resources available for the defense. It has also allowed us to have resources available for DNA testing, which has become a critical component, and certainly in some of the men that were released from death row was very critical. What we need to do right now is to look at the 85 recommendations that the Governor's Commission on Capital Punishment has recommended and thoroughly debate those. That is taking place right now in the State Senate and in the House of Representatives. What we will hopefully be able to do is that when we go back into session in the fall for veto session, we will be able to put some of those reforms in place. In terms of which ones should be a priority, I think what we need to do is look at the men who were released from death row and determine how it is that they ended up on death row incorrectly. The first thing I think that we should probably do is to make sure that people who have been convicted on jailhouse snitch testimony alone, it is inherently unreliable testimony, that those people should not face the death penalty, but should face life without parole as the highest sentence. I think that's a very obvious thing that we can put in place. In addition, I think we need to make sure that we are better resourcing even the Capital Litigation Trust Fund. My understanding right now is that at this point there's 2 months' worth of bills to be paid for experts on the defense side that we do not have resources for. And so I think we need to make sure that we are increasing our funding for the defense through this Capital Litigation Trust Fund. So there's a lot of work to be done, and hopefully we will get to do that in the fall veto session, and I think once these reforms have been put in place, we will be able to reinstitute the death penalty here in Illinois.
Do you know how many of these reforms have to go in place? It's unlikely that all of them can be passed. Is there a threshold where you could say, yes, this is enough, this is adequate?
Well, it's not a number, and in fact, not all of the 85 recommendations will require legislation. Some of them will require changes in Supreme Court rules. Some of them will require changes in practices at the local law enforcement level in terms of how they conduct investigations, in terms of how they do lineups. And so it's not necessarily a number. I think we have to look at these recommendations and make sure that a net has been put in place so that we prevent any prosecutorial misconduct from taking place, that we make sure that defenses are resourced, that in terms of actual prosecutions, we make sure that the evidence is reliable. We are using all of the technology that we can to make sure that we are not convicting innocent people. And so I think once we have a sufficient number of those reforms in place, we will be able to reinstitute the death penalty.
A lot of defense attorneys currently are inclined to believe that the governor may commute a number of sentences, death sentences that are currently pending, if not do a blanket commutation. Where do you think the recommendations should go? Is there anything from those recommendations or from the status of the death penalty in Illinois that would recommend the eventual abolition of the death penalty?
I think certainly in Illinois it has become very, very clear to the population that we have not had sufficient safeguards in place to properly implement a death penalty with the knowledge that we are only executing guilty people. That was the reason for the moratorium, and I think that has been the reason for us to be looking so seriously and taking so seriously the death penalty. Obviously, nobody wants to be in a position where they're putting an innocent person to death. I would hope that we would be able to change and reform the system to the point that we can be assured that we will not have any innocent people ending up on death row. And once that happens, there still is majority support in this state for the death penalty.
Should we see an end to the death penalty, or do you believe that the possibility should continue?
I'm actually in favor of the death penalty, but here in Illinois it's become very clear that we will need to make those necessary reforms so that everybody in the state of Illinois can have the faith that this system is not going to put innocent people to death.
You mentioned work on cases involving sex offenders, and you had mentioned the increasing use of DNA evidence. One of the proposals on your campaign site would be the extension statute of limitations on some cases. How do you balance that with the original intent of the statute of limitations?
Well, the concern for sex offenders and the concern for the victims of sex offenders is to make sure that justice is done and to make sure that we do not have sex offenders within our communities who are there to reoffend and to victimize women and children again. One of the largest problems that studies have indicated with sex offenders is that this is chronic lifetime behavior, even when people are in treatment. That's why the state of Colorado has actually adopted legislation that requires mandatory lifetime supervision for sex offenders. It's something that 9 other states have passed, and it's something that I am a proponent of passing here in Illinois. That way we would make sure that once someone has served their time, when they are re-released into communities, in addition to registering so that people know where they live, we actually have officers that will be going and making sure they continue to stay engaged in treatment programs and to make sure that they are not living or working near the types of people that they victimized before, because we need to make sure that our communities are going to be safe for women and children.
But Illinois is among states that currently have looked at keeping sex offenders incarcerated past the time of their sentences. Is that something that would continue in your administration? Should that change?
Well, that's certainly one of the tools that the Sex Offender Management Board has recommended and that the legislature has adopted. I think we need to do all that we can to make sure that sex offenders are not in communities if they are going to be unsupervised. That is why I think we absolutely have to put in place a mandatory lifetime supervision program for sex offenders.
Well, compare supervision with incarceration, because the question is whether a sex offender's rights are being violated by being held against his will past the time of the sentence.
What we're trying to do is to make sure that people who have not been reformed, and these are sex offenders, you know, these are people that are victimizing children and they're victimizing women mainly, that these people are not in communities if they are not thoroughly done in terms of treatment and if they have not been reformed. So we have got to make sure that they are not in our communities. If that requires us keeping people past their sentences, then we should do that. If it means they can be released into communities and we can provide for other people's safety in communities by having supervision, then we can do it that way. But I think both of those pieces need to be in place.
Senator, what would you like to do as Attorney General to provide more resources or help to local state's attorneys? Is there more that the office should be doing in that regard?
Absolutely. And, you know, let's take one issue. Let's take the methamphetamine issue that is completely plaguing downstate Illinois. We have a situation where local sheriffs and local state's attorneys, depending on whom you talk to throughout the state and depending on how large their local law enforcement offices are, could be spending 70-80% of their time and resources and manpower on dealing with methamphetamine. Right there, one issue taking up that amount of resources absolutely mandates that we have got to provide greater resources to local state's attorneys and to local sheriff's departments and local law enforcement. In order to do that in a tight budget year, there have got to be some creative solutions for this. I think it means everything from making sure that the criminals who are producing methamphetamine are the people that have to pay for the cleanup. It means imposing fines on them because these methamphetamine labs, the residue that is left is toxic waste. And so we are paying up to $5,000 to clean up even a small methamphetamine lab. In addition, I think we need to go after federal funds to make sure that we're bringing in as much money as we can from the federal government, which is really our tax dollars as well, to make sure that law enforcement here in the state is being efficiently monitored and efficiently able to carry out their mandate.
Are there strings attached? Would there be guidelines or policies which would be imposed on state's attorneys that they might find restrictive?
No, the idea, and in fact, if you look at the Attorney General statute, it's that the Attorney General is there to coordinate and to work with local state's attorneys. And so we just talked about the methamphetamine issue, but in addition, there are many other areas that can be complex for local state's attorneys to deal with. And as you know, it depends on what county you're in. Here in the state of Illinois, we have 102 counties. Now, some counties are very well-resourced. Cook County, in fact, their state's attorney's office is larger than the entire Attorney General's office. But what you want to make sure happens is that in some of the counties where you might only have the state's attorney and maybe one other part-time person helping out, if there is a complex murder case, if there is an issue with identity theft, which is another tremendously important and fast-growing crime here in Illinois, if those issues come up and they need help, you want them to be able to turn to the Attorney General's office. We can send somebody out to help them on a trial or on a matter.
Well, where would the money come from?
We just talked about that. The money will.
You ask for federal funds, but in a time when the state is facing large deficits and the federal government may be less inclined to devote extra money to things like this, where would it come from?
Actually, the Department of Justice at the federal level does have a lot of funding available through grant programs. Those are one of the avenues that we're looking at in terms of making sure that we're bringing money back for the methamphetamine problem. It's one of the areas that we're looking at in terms of bringing more money back to the state to provide services and increase prosecutions for domestic violence. So the federal government still is providing funding, and we need to make sure that Illinois is getting its fair share, because you're correct. When we do have a difficult budget situation, as we have this year, and my guess is we will have this coming year, we need to be creative and we need to look for resources in other places. But I don't think it's legitimate for us to compromise the safety of our communities and the safety of some of our most vulnerable people by simply saying we don't have the resources and we can't find them.
The price of prescription drugs and the availability of prescription drugs to people have been an issue that a lot of politicians have latched onto, and you have brought out a proposal of your own. Where does the Attorney General's responsibility lie in that? And by having the Attorney General involved, is there an admission or an assertion that fraud or other things that an AG's office would handle are involved in the price of prescription drugs?
Well, there's a legitimate reason that politicians are talking about the price of prescription drugs. We're talking about it because seniors in particular are talking to us about it. Every single week when I am out in different communities around the state, I will have a senior citizen come up to me and tell me a story of how they cut their pills in half. Or of how just last week or 2 weeks ago we did a press conference and there was a couple, Ray and Gailey Andrews, who came up, both in their 70s. While they retired years ago, they are now, between the two of them, working three part-time jobs just to pay for their prescriptions. So it is a legitimate concern.
But where
it's
is,
not
where,
just a political concern.
But where is it the duty of the AG and not the duty of the legislature or thereabouts?
Well, in fact, one of the duties of the Attorney General is to go after pharmaceutical companies that are engaging in illegal practices to keep their prices high or to prevent generics from getting onto the market. So there are legitimate prosecutorial and cases that should be brought against some of the pharmaceutical companies that are doing this. Now, the Attorney General has always had a purview in terms of working with the legislature and promoting legislation. I think it's something that I certainly will take seriously because of my experience in the state Senate. So we do need to be putting in place legislation that hopefully will create a drug discount program for seniors so that our seniors will not be charged exorbitant prices or find themselves in a position where prescription drugs are unaffordable for them. In addition, I want to put in place something that I think is quite creative that the Attorney General in Arizona did. She did a study throughout the state and looked at prescription drug prices and found that different prices were being charged in different parts of the state. I want to make sure that that information, if we do a study like that here in Illinois, is publicly available so that people can make their decision as to where to purchase their drugs based on the best prices, and that way they would find it better in terms of their ability to afford their prescription medication.
Do you feel that there are specific situations where there would be allegations of fraud that's happening right now that the current Attorney General's office isn't following or should be following up more on?
Illinois is not a leader in terms of cases that are being brought against pharmaceutical companies. And if you look across the country, you will see a lot of states that have engaged in litigation against pharmaceutical companies and have been more aggressive about it. So I would certainly hope that the current Attorney General would look into some of those matters. And I can guarantee you that when I'm the Attorney General, that's going to be a priority.
Senator Madigan, you've made your pro-choice position part of your campaign. Is it proper for an attorney general candidate to make their position on abortion a major campaign issue when they may be called upon to uphold and enforce laws that they might consider to be against their position?
Obviously, as the attorney general, I will be in a position from time to time to uphold laws that I may not agree with, but that is part of my obligation. But in terms of the public having a knowledge as to my background and as to my beliefs, I have been a strong supporter of a woman's right to choose. I believe that those decisions should be made between a woman and her doctor, and that is how they should be handled.
What difference does it make as far as being Attorney General is concerned, how you feel on the abortion issue?
I think the only difference it makes is to make sure that in addition to protecting a woman's right to choose, we really look at this and we really look at women's health as a broader issue and that those rights need to be protected, as well as to make sure that women have access to the health services that they need. And we do have instances here in the state of Illinois where women who go to seek health services and they may not be reproductive health services, but go to seek health services, have been harassed, and it's been difficult for them to access those services. I think we want to make sure that people do have the ability to go see their doctor and to make those decisions about their bodies between themselves and their doctor.
One thing that the Attorney General's office and the state will be involved in that hadn't been envisioned a year ago, or a little more than a year ago, is Homeland Security. What kinds of things do you foresee the Attorney General's office doing under your leadership in the next year or two?
Already in the legislature, in the aftermath of September 11th, the biggest issue that we've had to look at, I think, is preparedness. And what programs is the state going to put in place, and what measures will the state put in place, and what resources will be provided to local communities to make sure if there is a terrorist event that takes place in our state, we will be prepared to respond. I introduced model legislation that had been drafted for the CDC by the people at Georgetown University and Johns Hopkins University to look at the possibility of bioterrorism and to make sure that our health laws were updated so that we could respond as we needed to, as opposed to having to run to court to find out what the parameters of the law would allow us to do if there was an event. I think we have done a fairly good job at the state level in terms of putting in place a Homeland Security person, Matt Bettenhausen, who has been working diligently throughout the state of Illinois to make sure that our first responders will have the equipment that they need to make sure that we have blueprints of buildings. We know where people are. We've been in communication with the hospitals to make sure that if there is anything that happens here in Illinois, we will be prepared.
How about the prosecution of terrorist cases? Has the state or the country gone too far in your mind, or are there things that that can be done as far as balancing public security again with civil rights?
I think here in Illinois, when we looked at passing legislation, there was a great deal of concern and a great deal of negotiation that took place to make sure that people's civil liberties were not going to be trampled on. And I think it is a legitimate concern that people have, but people have expressed repeatedly to me that their overriding concern right now is to make sure that we here in the state of Illinois are going to be safe from terrorism. And some of the provisions that we've put in place do have statutes of limitation. So in case we find that something is unnecessary and does not need to be continued, it will automatically be repealed. if it does need to continue, we will have to have that debate again in a couple of years. So we did put in place a good number of restrictions and, I think, safeguards to make sure that we don't trample on people's civil liberties. But again, I think the priority needs to be to make sure that we are prepared, because at this point, we've been put on notice and we have to be prepared for the unexpected.
Lisa Madigan, Illinois State Senator and the Democratic candidate for the Illinois Attorney General's Office. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Madigan's opponent is Republican Joe Burkett, who has been the state's attorney in DuPage County for the last 6 years. Burkett has been a prosecutor in that county since 1981. He's married with two children and lives in Wheaton. Joe Burkett also recently talked with myself and Jim Eddowes.
You're a state's attorney in DuPage County. Do you see the state attorney general's office as the county state's attorney's office written large, or is there something different about it?
Is the county state's attorney's office different than the attorney general's office?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the question? Well, obviously there's a difference. The roles and responsibilities are very similar. The duties of the attorney general are virtually identical in many respects to those of the state's attorneys, the duty to prosecute and defend, the duty to represent all the people before the Supreme Court. But the role is much more expansive. The attorney general has a primary role, for example, in protecting consumer interest and protecting the environment. The attorney general also has a lot of regulatory power over, for example, the charitable organizations in this state, a lot of regulatory power over franchisees and franchisors under the Franchise Disclosure Act. So there's a lot of regulatory power that the attorney general has that the state's attorneys do not have. But the duties and responsibilities otherwise are very similar. The duty to protect the people, to enforce the law, to defend government, to defend employees, the duty to prosecute actions in court. Now, many of those responsibilities have, you know, there's concurrent jurisdiction with the local state's attorneys. The duty to protect the environment, for example. In many cases, I currently am in a partnership role with the Attorney General's Office in environmental litigation, both civil and criminal. So there's a lot of similarities, but obviously it's a much more expansive role.
How important, then, do you see your experience as a county state's attorney being to the job?
Well, it's critical. If you look at the role of the attorney general, there's basically four roles. The role of being an effective advocate. That means somebody who's tried cases, knows how to manage litigators, the most important team of litigators in the state. The second role, the role of an effective administrator, somebody who knows how to run a large organization. I administer the second largest office in the state now, 190 employees. The attorney general's office is about 400 lawyers. I manage a staff now of about 187 lawyers, actually. The second role is very similar. It's just more expansive. It's broader. The third role is the role of an effective advisor to state government. You have a duty and responsibility to advise the governor, both chambers of the General Assembly, all the various departments, and also to advise and consult the 102 state's attorneys. So that's very similar. I fill that role now. And the fourth and final role is an effective policymaker, somebody who can bring fresh ideas to Springfield and work with law enforcement. I fill that role now very effectively. I've drafted more than 40 bills that are now law, protecting people across the state. So there's a lot of similarities, and the training ground of coming up through the ranks and managing a large law office is critical to running an effective attorney general's office.
You've mentioned that you're very often in your campaign ads and in your stump speeches that your competitor, Lisa Madigan, has never tried a case in her life.
Mm-hmm.
How important is that when you do have a staff of so many attorneys and the chance of an attorney general actually, you know, pleading a case himself is fairly low?
Well, that's obviously a very important role of being respected. Respect starts at the top. Somebody who has tried cases and litigated cases, argued cases before the Illinois Supreme Court, the appellate courts, and the trial courts at both state and federal levels, it's critical to having the respect of your peers and your colleagues. Leadership starts at the top. You know, somebody who comes into that office who's never tried a case, who has never managed a law office, is going to have a difficult time getting the respects of the employees in the office or being respected outside. Furthermore, just the knowledge of how to handle a case. Keep in mind, the attorney general is at the negotiating table, and every attorney general, with maybe one exception, was actually a trial litigator, somebody who tried cases, For example, the current attorney general had, you know, many, many years of experience trying cases in both the trial courts and the appellate courts, and that experience is invaluable. You know, there is no substitute for experience. That's not, you know, that's not just a slogan. That's true. There's no substitute for it. My experience that I have as a prosecutor and as a trial lawyer comes in handy every single day in making decisions in the office.
Your Democratic opponent has played up the advocate role. The people's advocate is a phrase that she often uses to describe the state attorney general's office. Is that a portion of the job you think she overplays? How would you see that part of the job?
Well, it is a portion of the job that she clearly overplays. The duties and responsibilities of the attorney general, if you look at them, representing the people in all cases before the Illinois Supreme Court, in the trial courts, in the appellate courts, prosecuting cases on behalf of the state and its citizens, defending government officials, defending employees, state government employees in federal court actions and state court actions, consulting and advising the state's attorneys, investigating and prosecuting violations of laws that the attorney general has a responsibility to enforce, consulting the governor and the various departments of state government, preparing contracts, giving opinions to the General Assembly. I mean, these are all things that I do now, prosecuting breaches of the public trust, prosecuting cases involving the jurisdiction of the statewide grand jury. Those are the duties. Nowhere in those duties do you see the term advocate for the people. Now, you are the advocate in terms of the trial advocate and the appellate advocate, but you're much more than that. The main duties and responsibilities of the attorney general are law enforcement related, enforcing the law, both the civil laws and the criminal laws, to protect the people of the state of Illinois. That does not mean, however, that you don't have a critical policy role to play in the advocacy role, and I play that now very effectively. I've led task forces on issues like child support, consumer laws, consumer protection, domestic violence, juvenile justice, you name it. I've done those jobs. I sit on a number of statewide boards and committees now in that policymaking role, and that's a very important role. But my opponent should not play it up as if that's the most important part of the job. The most important part of the job is running an effective office, making sure that the people who represent the interests of the people of the state of Illinois are effective, they're professional, they're well-trained, they're qualified, and that starts at the top with the Attorney General himself.
As the Attorney General, your office would possibly be charged with investigating or prosecuting members of your own party. What would you do in situations like that? How would your office maintain public credibility in that case with the heavy support that attorney general's candidates get from their parties?
Well, first of all, you know, it's no secret that I'm a Republican, but I have a record of going after corrupt public officials from both parties, regardless of party allegiance. You know, I've investigated and prosecuted high-profile public officials. I've made public integrity a top priority of my current office. When I was elected, I made a commitment to create a public integrity unit. I prosecuted some of the most high-profile public corruption cases in state court history. For example, Bob Hickman, who was appointed to director of the Illinois Toll Highway Authority by Governor Edgar. That case was indicted under my predecessor's administration. I prosecuted it. He was stripped of his office, went to jail. His partner in crime, State Representative Joe Kotlarz, was also convicted, went to jail. They paid restitution of $240,000. And most recently, you know, in the current license for bribe scandal, for example, in 1998, I investigated and prosecuted an elected Republican official, committeeman from Addison Township, Roger Wahlberg, who was convicted and went to the penitentiary for selling driver's licenses and using part of that money to buy fundraising tickets. That's leadership. That's a person who's shown independence. And I'll do the same thing as Illinois Attorney General. When it comes right down to it, I became a lawyer to become a prosecutor, not a politician. And I have the resume of a prosecutor, not a politician, unlike my opponent, who's only practiced law for 4 years and has never prosecuted a case in her lifetime.
Public corruption has been one of the concerns in the state, perhaps on a nationwide basis in this past year. There have been a lot of reports about corporate corruption. Is that something that you would want to see the Attorney General's office handling differently or focusing on differently, and do you have the tools to do it?
Well, I've taught and trained prosecutors across the state and taught and trained police officers both at the federal, state, and local level on the investigation and prosecution of public corruption cases and white-collar crime cases. The Attorney General's office does have an expansive role to play. He has jurisdiction over securities fraud, for example. Antitrust violations, Bank Fraud, Consumer Fraud and Deceptive Business Practices Act, the Deceptive Advertising Act. So all of those areas of white-collar crime that the Attorney General has authority over, he should play an expansive role in prosecuting those cases that are multi-jurisdictional, that cover, that cross county lines. And obviously the training component's very important, making sure that you make that a priority of the office, that you train locally elected state's attorneys and law enforcement officials to do a better job investigating and prosecuting white-collar crime. I've made that a priority of my current administration. It will be as the Attorney General.
Are you satisfied with the current way that the Attorney General's office is handling cases of public corruption? Is the structure as you would want it? Do you see that is being handled correctly at this point?
Well, the events of September 11th have changed a lot of things. You know, we have relied so heavily in this state on the federal government to conduct investigations involving public corruption. As a state's attorney, I haven't relied on the feds. I've done most of my own investigations and prosecutions, but occasionally referred a case to the U.S. Attorney's Office. I think the Attorney General has to play a more expansive role. We are going to ask the General Assembly to give the Attorney General the specific authority to investigate and prosecute violations of the Official Misconduct Act, bribery, bid rigging, and other related statutes. There is clearly going to be a void that must be filled now by a prosecutor who has statewide jurisdiction, and the only prosecutor besides the federal government that has that jurisdiction is the Attorney General's office.
Would the licenses for bribe scandal, if it were to have happened under your jurisdiction, been handled differently? Is it right for it to be in the federal jurisdiction now, since you say that the change has put more of an onus on the state office?
I think that the investigation has been handled very well by the U.S. Attorney's Office and the FBI. I obviously worked with them during the small piece of the investigation that we had involving DuPage County. Those three men were involved in an ongoing scheme to sell driver's licenses, which posed a serious threat to public safety. Selling driver's licenses to convicted drunk drivers and one suspected terrorist. We finished that portion of the investigation in 1998 and furnished the information, together with the fact that bribe money was going to pay for fundraising tickets to the FBI and U.S. Attorney's Office. The Attorney General did the right thing in deferring to the U.S. Attorney's Office. And in the letter to the editor that was written today by Dan Webb, Anton Valukas, and Fred Foreman, they mention the fact there's two areas where you would have parallel investigations. One, when you're asked to assist, like, as for example, we were. Or secondly, where you are not satisfied with the scope and the professionalism of the investigation, where you have a serious question about whether or not it's being handled thoroughly. So in that regard, Jim Ryan did the right thing by stepping aside. However, I do believe the Attorney General today, in this climate, needs to have an expanded role, and it's something we've talked about since the time I announced my candidacy for office, to create a public integrity unit, to expand the authority of the Attorney General to investigate these violations, to not just have the vague authority to go after and prosecute breaches of trust involving state funds, but to give specific authority to the Attorney General under those statutes that have criminal penalties associated with that kind of conduct. So it's the answer to the question is the Attorney General handled it, but I believe there's a need to expand the authority.
There have been allegations about preference given to attorneys and law firms that have donated to your campaigns. How do you address that? Is that something that how does that reflect on the credibility of an Attorney General?
Well, first of all, let's look at the allegation. My opponent made this allegation. She's not attacking me necessarily. I can take that kind of heat. She's attacked the hundreds of prosecutors, police officers, defense attorneys, and judges without any credibility and made these allegations based upon a survey of 1,300 cases out of 1.6 million cases that I've filed since I've been state's attorney. I have never compromised justice in a case. In fact, there was a letter to the editor by Pat Larson, who's been watching me and following my career, and she's a court watcher for AIM, Alliance Against Intoxicated Motorists, and she said it in a letter to the editor. Joe Burkett would never compromise and has never compromised his integrity for a campaign contribution. It would never happen. Yesterday, I hosted a press conference with police officers, the most aggressive DUI riders in our county and some of the most aggressive in the state. And they also stood by me and said that that's an outrageous claim. My opponent is twisting and distorting statistics and lying about my record because she's got no record of her own. That's the price of leadership. With respect to campaign contributions, my campaign contributions are open. They're public. I run this, one of the best offices in the state, the highest conviction rate of any large county in the nation. Certainly there's nothing in the public record that would suggest that I would ever compromise my integrity. And I became a lawyer to become a prosecutor, largely as a result of my experiences as a child, being a victim of crime, witnessing an attack on my family. I'm a prosecutor because I care about people who have been harmed, people who have been wronged, and I want to see justice done for them. And especially in the area of DUI enforcement, I'm known as one of the most aggressive DUI prosecutors in the state. I've received recognition from AIM, Alliance Against Intoxicated Motorists, and MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, for my work, reform the law, and aggressively prosecuted cases in the courtroom and outside the courtroom. So there is no merit whatsoever to her claims, but she's making them because she's desperate. She has no record of her own.
You point in your campaign website to a dramatic increase in child abductions and child abuse cases. Does the State Attorney General's office need a new focus on that issue, do you feel?
Well, there are policy areas where the Attorney General can play a primary role in providing advice. Now, one of the areas where the Attorney General is a policymaker, you talked about the area of policy and advocacy before, you sit on a number of boards and committees. The Attorney General sits, for example, on the Violence Prevention Authority as the co-chairman. The Attorney General also sits on the Criminal Justice Information Authority, which is a policymaking arm for law enforcement in this state. So you do have a primary role to play, especially in the area where protecting society's most vulnerable, children, seniors, persons with disabilities. So that's where you play the policymaking role and promoting strong law enforcement measures like the expanded AMBER program that I talked about the other day in my press conference. We need to have a partnership with our sister states to make sure that when we have an AMBER alert in Illinois, it goes up in the neighboring states, because no matter where you are in Illinois, you're within a couple of hours of a bordering state.
Questions have been raised about the programs that have been enacted in Illinois and elsewhere that keep convicted sex offenders behind bars past their prison sentences until a professional declares that they're rehabilitated. Should that be continued in Illinois? How does that balance public safety with civil rights, and how do you go about achieving that fine balance as an attorney general?
Well, that challenge has been addressed, the civil rights challenge. The Sexually Violent Persons Act has been upheld as being constitutional, and the burden is, of course, on the government to prove that the offender continues to be a danger to society, and he can be detained past his release date if it can be demonstrated that he continues to pose a serious threat to public safety. That means a very aggressive management program for sex offenders who are released into the community. One of the other areas where I have expertise and will continue to assist the state in protecting the public is the Sex Offender Management Board. The Attorney General is a member of that board as well by statute. I have prosecuted a number of sex offenders, both rapists and child sex offenders, throughout the course of my career. I've got a lot of experience regarding that, and I look to offer that experience to the Sex Offender Management Board in making sure we do a better job protecting the people. There's a lot of areas that we haven't explored, for example, pretrial issues. A lot of sex offenders are post bail. They're released out into the community, and they, in many cases, in far too many cases, reoffend while they're on bond. I'd like to see a statute where we would have the authority, where we can establish clear and convincing evidence that the offender may be dangerous, to have a pretrial evaluation, which, of course, could not be used at the trial, but would ensure public safety.
Since Governor Ryan imposed his moratorium on capital punishment, there have been several reforms put into place at various levels of state government. Do you feel there are still things that ought to be done?
There are things that need to be done. You know, I've been a policymaker there. I helped to draft many of the reforms that are in place. In fact, some of them I drafted verbatim that are now law. I think the Attorney General clearly should be a person who is experienced in the area of capital punishment, because you do have a primary role to play both in the courtroom and also at the policymaking table. The Attorney General represents and advocates on all capital cases before the Illinois Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, and, of course, at the trial and appellate levels in federal habeas litigation in capital cases. I have that experience. I'm running against someone who has zero experience in capital cases. I do believe there are additional reforms that would improve the system in our state. However, I also believe that the Illinois Supreme Court has spoken on this issue, and that is that the current statute is constitutional, and that none of the new reforms, either the ones that have been implemented or the ones that are being contemplated now, apply to cases that have already been tried, that are pending sentence or on review. So we have to be smart about the way we approach capital punishment and continue to look at each case individually, give it the close scrutiny that it's entitled to, making sure that justice was done in those cases and that the most extreme sanction that can be imposed is appropriate in each individual case.
Given that, are there particular reforms that you would promote as legislation or as practices or policy in your office?
There are a couple of new reforms that the 102 state's attorneys in this state agree upon that we want to continue to promote in the General Assembly, a couple of which I've drafted: a police Brady requirement, which would be a police disclosure requirement, making sure that law enforcement turns over every police report in all felony cases to the prosecution so we can fulfill our discovery obligations. Discovery is turning over information to the defense. That would include a policy that police turn over exculpatory information or evidence that would suggest innocence, and that every police department in the state have a policy on that. I think everyone agrees that's a great reform. I've drafted it. It's gotten through the Senate twice and been stalled in the House. Another reform that we proposed is making law a principle that is the law in Illinois, and that's the right of a defendant to raise a freestanding claim of innocence. That's another area that we should get done. That should be part of the Post-Conviction Hearing Act so everyone understands what the procedure is. Those are two reforms that are on the books. Expanded jury instructions regarding the testimony of the so-called jailhouse informants, instructing the jury on how to perceive that testimony, a jury instruction on the failure to record when the technology is available and law enforcement has the ability to tape record, allowing juries to be specifically instructed. But let me say this about any reforms. Reforms must be balanced. And when I say balanced, that means that they have to respect the rights of the community, the rights of a defendant to ensure a fair trial, and the rights of crime victims and their families, making sure that justice is done, that the defendant have obviously ample opportunity to challenge the evidence against him, to have a fair trial, but also that we, in the interest of fairness, that we do not forget about the interest of society in protecting the citizens out there.
Do you feel then that there are some reform proposals that are being discussed a lot that just wouldn't work, that would cause more harm than good?
Well, there's 87 proposals, and most of them are applauding the work that's been done. A lot of it is, well-informed, insightful discussion about reforms that have already taken place and, you know, basically applauding the Supreme Court and everybody who's been involved. But there are some proposals that do not merit passage that we've commented on. But many of the reforms are good ideas, and there's a balance to be struck. And when I talk about that issue of respect, you know, the mandatory videotaping, I've for a long time been a proponent of videotaping confessions and interrogations where you can. But requiring and imposing an exclusionary rule on law enforcement for otherwise valid admissible evidence is not the right way to go. I think there's a balance to be struck. The state's attorneys, 102 state's attorneys, through the president of the association, Dick Devine, and the committee, I was on the committee, proposed, for example, pilot projects to begin this process. We do think that eliminating a one-party consent requirement for tape recording would be the way to go in Illinois, which would encourage tape recording of all confessions without having that requirement that the suspect consent to it.
DNA testing. Do you think the state is appropriating enough right now for its labs to keep up with the requests for DNA testing?
Well, in that area, I've been a leader. I drafted the Post-Conviction DNA testing legislation in 1996 that gives a suspect or a person who's incarcerated the right to testing. I'm very proud of that legislation, which has become a model for the nation. And I also drafted the DNA legislation that was recently passed that requires every convicted felon to give a DNA sample. The legislation provides for a $200 fee for every convicted felon if we collect just half of the amount of money due and owing from each of the people convicted. We'll collect between $5 to $7 to all the way up to possibly $12 million. Whether or not that's enough to cover the cost of the entire program, it remains to be seen. It should be. You know, the costs are going down. The Illinois State Police, we're working with them. We want to be very aggressive about finding grant funds to make up for the backlog and the shortage right now that they have in both manpower and equipment. So the answer is we should have enough money, but at the front end, we may have to go after and probably will have to go after very aggressively and find grant funds to get that job done.
You say that you are a pro-life candidate, if I'm not mistaken. How does that affect the job that an attorney general has to do in enforcing the laws as they stand at this point? What kind of advocate is the attorney general in changing those laws? Do you feel that your office would have any role in changing the laws eventually?
No, I don't see that we'd have any role to play in changing the law. My opponent's been trying to use that as an issue in this race. Let me just say what my position is. I'm pro-life. However, I favor an exception for cases involving the life of the mother, rape, and incest. I'm not opposed to any such exception. And I have a history of enforcing the law, a woman's right to choose, by prosecuting abortion protesters who've crossed the line between legitimate protest and interfering with the civil right, the right of a woman to have an abortion. So I would never allow my personal view to interfere with my duty to enforce the law. So I really don't see it playing any role. You know, I would defend the Constitution and the laws of the state of Illinois, including the current right of a woman to have an abortion. That's my job, to defend the law.
Identity theft, which you also make a point of in your campaign website, is that something the state attorney general's office can keep up with, a crime which seems to be very much on the increase?
Well, you know, one of the things that we have to do is we have to work with local law enforcement, as I've done in my county, creating an identity theft task force throughout the state, training and educating law enforcement, doing a better job sharing information about schemes that are going on out there. The legislation that I've proposed, I think, is a good idea. I think my opponent even likes it, which will create a civil liability for anybody convicted of identity theft for the victim. So the defendant will have to pay for the cost of cleaning up the credit record and the attorney's fees for any victim of identity theft. We're also proposing expanded jurisdiction, essentially a long-arm statute for criminal identity theft, where you've taken identity from someone here in Illinois and used it in another state. We would have jurisdiction here in Illinois to prosecute. But it's a growing problem. I believe my experience and my leadership inside and outside the courtroom, which includes prosecuting scores of identity theft cases, gives me an advantage there.
Joe Burkett is the Republican candidate for Attorney General of Illinois. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tom. Thank you, Jim, for having me on. Thank you.
Burkett, a Republican, is running against Democratic State Senator Lisa Madigan for the state attorney general's post. Jim Meadows and I conducted the interviews. Election Day is next Tuesday, and polls will be open in Illinois from 6 a.m. until 7 p.m. Besides the attorney general's race, Illinois voters will choose a governor and lieutenant governor, a secretary of state, a comptroller, and a treasurer. One U.S. Senate seat is up for election, as are all congressional and state legislative seats. County board races and some races for other county offices will take place then, too. WILL AM 580 will provide live coverage of the vote count with help from NPR and Illinois Public Radio Tuesday night, beginning at 7 o'clock. We hope you tune in after casting your ballot. Dave Dickey helped produce these editorial board interviews. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.